evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Tuesday, February 18, 2025. Communities in eastern Equatorial State say they are contributing food items for feeding the South Sudan National Army.
The soldiers were not living well, and they are very important to us. So the community decided to contribute some food items like millet, beans, and everything that can be given so that they have enough food when they are there.
And the UN mission in South Sudan says the crisis in Western Equatoria and Upper Nile states should end.
These are very, very deeply concerning to us. And we would really, really like to call for restraint, for all involved parties to lay down their arms and to, you know, make sure that people dialogue.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Sudanese paramilitary say they have killed more than 200 people, including women and children, in a Tuesday assault on villages in the country. A group calling itself Emergency Lawyers said the paramilitary rapid support forces attacked unarmed civilians in the villages of Al-Kadris and Al-Kelwat in White Nile State. The French news agency AFP reports that RSF carried out executions, kidnapping, forced disappearance, and property looting during the assault since Saturday, which also left hundreds wounded or missing. The lawyers group said some residents were shot while attempting to flee across the Nile River, some drowned in the process, with the lawyers calling the attack an act of genocide. VOA could not independently verify the information from the lawyers group. Communities in Equatorial County of Eastern Equatorial State say they have contributed cash and money to support the South Sudan People's Defense Forces deployed to protect the border with Uganda at Sertenye. The troops threatened to abandon their duty stations because of a lack of basic supplies. This program requested comments from senior officers in Torit, but they declined to speak. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
Some members of the South Sudan People Defense Force deployed at Sertenya to monitor tension and encroachment along the border says they are surviving on contribution from communities in the area. Timothy Loboy Lolori, commissioner of Ikotos County, says the community in his area was willing to contribute food to the National Army.
When a neighbor comes to you and if you see him without something and a struggling life, and for you who have already settled, you will have that charity of helping every time sometimes coming to you asking for something. The most important thing, the behavior of the soldiers, they are really having that responsibility to guide the citizen and community also see them. They don't have anything to eat, and that's why people came with that initiative.
Odong Joseph, Paramount Chief of Ikotos, says the food contribution will continue to feed soldiers protecting citizens from the insecurity at the border.
The soldiers were not living well, and they are very important to us. So the community decided to contribute some food items like millet, beans, and everything that can be given so that they have enough food when they are there. Another problem is the water. The place is far and there is no water source, and we also don't have fuel to transport water to them. We request the state government to drill water points in that area.
VOA contacted the South Sudan People Defense Force commander in Torit and Ikotos, but all declined to comment. Agostino Kaimola Loswak, a resident in Ikotos County, says community was requested by the authorities to support the forces that were deployed and people were happy to help. Agostino says since the deployment of the forces, the border is safe from encroachment.
We collected from each household a jar of millet and others gave cash. Others who have more gave 2 jars. And anything that they can afford to give, millet, maize, beans, or sorghum. Those were the contribution by the community. The security in Ikotos is now good since the deployment of the forces at the border. Theft and raiding have now stopped. Also, those Ugandans who used to encroach our land have gone back to their location.
The Eastern Equatoria State Government deployed the South Sudan People Defense Force at Sertenya to protect property following tension that has led to killing and livestock raiding between communities on both sides of South Sudan-Uganda border. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatoria capital, Torit.
Still on matters to do with security, the UN mission in South Sudan says it is concerned about the ongoing clashes in Nasir's Upper Nile state and rising tensions in Western Equatoria's Tombora and Najero counties. UNMISS is urging all parties to the 2018 peace deal to work for lasting peace in the country. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
The United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, is voicing serious concerns over recent violent clashes in Nasir of Upper Nile and continuing tensions in Western Equatorial State. The incidents have caused fatalities, the destruction of property, and the displacement of many civilians. UNMISS spokesperson Priyanka Shuzuri condemned the violence and called for immediate restraint to restore calm. She urged all parties to uphold the 2018 peace agreement, saying it is the only path to lasting peace.
The incidents of violence, such as what has been happening in the country and what has specifically happened in Nasir, in Upper Nile State in the past, over the past weekend on Friday and Saturday, that is the 14th and 15th of February. These are very, very deeply concerning to us. And we would really, really like to call for restraint for all involved parties to lay down their arms and to, you know, make sure that people dialogue instead of resorting to physical violence.
Shozuri says there is a need for the full deployment of unified forces as part of the revitalized peace agreement.
We've been trying to do everything we can, but at the end of the day, we also got caught in the crossfire in the violence in Nasir. And it is something that we're very concerned about. Every kind of violence, however big or small the clashes might be, have a direct impact on civilians, on people. And we are here to make sure that, you know, we do our best to protect as many people as possible.
Pork Both Baluang, SPLM-IO Director of Information and Public Relations, says recent attacks on SPLM-IO bases in Western Equatoria and Western Bahr-el Ghazal states could undermine the implementation of the 2018 peace deal.
So all of these incidents, they are definitely jeopardizing the implementation of the peace agreement, precisely the security arrangement, and we urge the SSPDF to demonstrate their genuine and political will to fully implementation of the security arrangement and RSS in general so that we can enter to the new extension with good faith in the process of the government to finish the outstanding issues of the agreement to pave the way for a peaceful, democratic, transparent and inclusive election in South Sudan at the end of the extended transition period.
South Sudan Minister of Information Michael McQuay downplayed the significance of the incidents, calling them normal skirmishes, and said they would not affect the new extension of the transitional period.
All these events have taken place. They cannot be denied they are there. these are normal skirmishes that do happen everywhere. And as such, you cannot conclude that the parties are not genuine and that they are not. The parties are fully committed to the implementation of the agreement. And this will not affect the extension of the new extension. As soon as the roadmap ends, then the new extension will be with immediate effect. And we'll make sure that we implement all the outstanding provisions of the agreement within the period of extension.
Major General Itayal Gilau Bitiu, chairperson of the Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangement Monitoring and Verification Mechanism, warned the integrity of the ceasefire is at risk because of intensified fighting on the border of Western Equatoria and Western Bahr el-Ghazali states. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Juba.
The South Sudan Ministry of Wildlife Conservation and Tourism is checking key sites in Jonglei State and Pibor Administrative Area to boost tourism in the country. But people who are involved in the hospitality industry are asking the government to build roads and improve security. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Bor.
A tourism bill was passed in June last year, and the Minister of Wildlife and Tourism is visiting various sites to ensure the industry is ready to attract investors. Laura Tetelino, the acting director for tourism, says the current activities are meant to create synergy in the ministry.
We have been waiting for the Tourism Act. Since it is out, then we are going to develop tourism rules and regulations. This area, we call it wildlife-based tourism, because the tourists will come and see the birds, they can see the animals, they can come and also improve the life of our community. I'm appealing to our host community to protect the wildlife so that they can get a job, they can get infrastructure, they can get schools, water. Even some of the people who have not gone to school, they will get a job.
Yar Mayendit works with the Association for Tours and Travel Agencies. She welcomes the opportunity to boost her business.
The launching is a very big opportunity for us tour and travel agencies. It's not just for the government, not just for the ministry, but for South Sudan as a country. This is encouraging to tourists out there to come and explore what South Sudan has. South Sudan hasn't really been doing well in the tourism industry. A lot of people out there perceive South Sudan as a war zone country, insecurity and everything. It's challenging, but it's not as much as it used to be before. Now we have access to national game parks, we have access to game reserves.
Gabriel Mabior Chipping, the Secretary General of the Hotel and Catering Association of South Sudan, says security and road networks remain key challenges for tourism in the country.
Without hotel, tourism will not be attracted much. The opportunity is in other protected areas, game reserves, there are no camp and lodges. But that one need hotel to invest in those areas there. This launching also, it will increase what we call a package for hotel tourism. Somebody can book in Europe, and first of all, you will book in the hotel, and the hotel will take them to the park. So this launching here will boost the hotel to have a lot of investors who coming in to generate income to the country.
General Kamisa Diang Ding, the Director General of Wildlife Service and Conservation at the ministry, says motorcycles and vehicles in Jonglei kill a huge number of animals, which could affect tourism. George Arwad George, the Commissioner of Twitch East County, says he is going to work to sensitize his people on the importance of protecting wildlife.
We have seen thousands of wildlife has scattered because of fear that they were be reported to have been killed illegally. And actually it is because of poverty of our country that allowed most of the civilians to take law into their own hands. And we, the administrators, commissioners of the areas, we are not encouraged the illegal killing, because wildlife is the main backbone of our economy in tourism and conservation, as second to our agriculture economy.
The tourism industry makes up a small share of the GDP of South Sudan, only 1.8% as of 2013. According to a report by the World Travel and Tourism Council, the contribution of travel and tourism in GDP was expected to grow 4.1% by the year 2024. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, lawmakers in the United States are looking at a plan to start collecting information on immigration status of students and parents. Find out why after the break. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The Atlantic Council's Africa Center in Washington hosted a discussion on developments in Sudan, Ethiopia, Somalia, and Djibouti. The talk focused on the current state and the future of the Horn of African countries and what influence visiting countries are having on the region. VOA's Philip Alexio reports.
Good morning from Washington, D.C.
The five-member panel of experts painted a complicated picture of countries in a region that have struggled to find lasting stability. Add to that, countries like China, Russia, Turkey, and the United States, among others, play their own role in either to help or, some might say, complicate things. Rare earth minerals have every country's interest, and water access from the Red Sea, the Nile River, and the Gulf of Aden have Africa's focus. In Sudan, a country at war with millions of people being displaced and starving and in need of constant aid, where is that going? Khalid Kerr is the founder and director of Confluence Advisory and says history indicates wars like Sudan have a trajectory of 20 years and that it's only been about 3 years so far.
And even if the war doesn't last 20 years, we have, unfortunately, a set of actors that have now mushroomed. We have, rather than two main belligerent actors what we started with in April of 2023, or four, really, if you count the non-signatories to the peace agreement, we now have maybe a dozen, maybe more. And this makes it extremely difficult for, you know, outside actors to try and corral these groups together.
Add to that the rift between Ethiopia and Somalia after Ethiopia signed a non-binding agreement with the breakaway Republic of Somaliland last year. Michael Woldemariam, associate professor at the University of Maryland, says there are solutions to be had, but reinvigorating a regional peace initiative would be a start.
I think we need a region-wide conversation, one that's actually trans-regional, right, that brings the African side of the Red Sea and the Middle Eastern side of the Red Sea together to dialogue about the ways in which various conflicts across the region can be de-escalated.
Woldemariam says the U.S. can and should play a role because they have the capabilities and relationships with everyone in the region, except perhaps Eritrea. But the new administration is recalibrating its foreign policy, and until President Trump selects African envoys, the best guess for U.S. engagement today lies in its recent involvement, according to Laurent Cloche-Blanchard, a specialist in African affairs at the Congressional Research Service.
At the very end of Congress, we saw legislation passed to require the next administration to appoint another special envoy for Sudan. How quickly the Trump administration will move on that is not yet clear.
As the Sudan continues to percolate, so do the tensions between Eritrea and Ethiopia. Alan Boswell, project director for the Horn of Africa at the International Crisis Group, says what used to be the anchor of regional stability between Ethiopia and Kenya is different with the rise of Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. Since the Tigray War, there's still an ongoing insurgency in Oromia and another in the Amhara region. Then there's a bitter dispute, he says, with Egypt over building the Grand Renaissance Ethiopian Dam, a big concern for Egypt.
I was just in Cairo last week, and I'll say that for the Egyptians, it's no longer about just that dam. It's also now about what they fear will be future dams by the Ethiopians and by recent ratification by upstream countries of the Nile Basin Initiative, which it considers a threat. On top of all that, there's been very escalating tensions with Eritrea.
Boswell feels the tensions between Ethiopia and Eritrea could lead to civil war, and the percolating situation in Sudan is not helping.
We could see it merge with the war in Sudan if it's still going on, and we would undoubtedly see a proxy war among allied Middle Eastern powers over this as well. It could destabilize not just the region, but the Red Sea as well. It's a very worrying possibility.
The control of water has its own challenges, but beyond that, Boswell says talk of the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, of replacing the dollar with blockchain technology is another thing to watch, as the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Egyptians, the Ethiopians, wondering what impact such a change would mean to them. Nonetheless, with so much instability, Woldemariam says for the U.S. to be more effective in bringing stability, experience has shown that special envoy offices need to be structured in the right way so there are resources with enough staffing to handle the complex arrangements with so many different countries.
They need lines of connection and communication with top levels of the State Department, the White House, to be able to mobilize the U.S. government. I mean, you just don't want them on an island doing their thing without the kind of senior level support that's necessary. So the structure of that effort needs some attention.
Philip Alexiou, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we move to South Africa, where some regional analysts say the summit of the African Union this year in Addis Ababa merely served to strengthen the AU's reputation for being unable to resolve conflicts. Conflicts are raging across Africa, from Sudan to the Sahel, from Mozambique to Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, with AU not playing a meaningful role in ending any of them. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Even as the African Union's outgoing and incoming leaders called for warring parties in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo to respect a ceasefire, M23 rebels seized another key city in the region, and fighting continued to rage. DRC President Felix Tshisekedi and Rwandan leader Paul Kagame both attacked the AU, accusing it of lacking credibility. The AU wrapped up its annual summit on Sunday in Addis Ababa. An African affairs analyst at Fitz University in Johannesburg, Professor Bob Wekesa, says the AU lacks authority and some of its members don't respect it. He notes that the AU has never been good at ending conflict, one of its primary mandates.
We have to remember that this is the African Union that was taking over from the Organization of African Unity, which had been accused of merely being a barking dog that couldn't bite. And so from the optimism of the founders of the AU, including Thabo Mbeki, Olusegun Obasanjo, Abdoulaye Wade, in 2000 to present, it has more failed than succeeded, in my opinion.
International relations expert Professor Gilbert Kadiagala says the AU and its Peace and Security Commission have very limited powers.
All the powers are with the member states. The commission is there to implement what member states are coming up with. So we have to be very modest about their roles on everything from financing to conflict resolution to peace building.
Kadiagala says it's difficult to stop conflicts on the continent because there's little unity among member states, not because the AU is badly structured. For instance, he points out, some member states condemn the role Rwanda is playing in Eastern DRC, while many others stay silent. The United Nations and the DRC government accuse Rwanda of backing the M23 rebels and of having sent Rwandan forces into Congolese territory. The Kigali government has never said it directly backs the rebels, but says it's defending its territory. Rwanda also accuses Kinshasa of backing a rebel group that aims to overthrow the Kigali government. Kadiagala says the AU sanctions some countries for conducting coups and not others.
I think we've pretty much lost the war on unconstitutional change of government. We've seen this happening in Mali, in Niger, in Burkina Faso. Those countries are still suspended from the African Union. And there is really no momentum for them to do what the AU told them to do, which is you need to return back to constitutional rule.
He says it's unfair to expect the AU alone to solve complex conflicts, such as those in DRC and Sudan.
The AU peacekeeping mechanisms are the last resort. First line of responsibility with nation states, because these countries are independent, so they have to put their houses in order. The second level of responsibility is sub-region organizations like SADC, the East African Community, what's happening in the Congo. This is the level at which these countries have to show that they can in fact help countries that are in conflict resolve their problems.
Kadiagala says the AU's new leaders would do well to instill a culture of proactive conflict prevention within the organization, so disputes are not left to simmer before they become wars. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
From Johannesburg, we move back to U.S., where lawmakers in the U.S. state of Oklahoma are looking at a plan to start collecting information on the immigration status of students and parents in public schools. It is a proposed rule that some local school officials are already saying they will refuse to enforce. Scott Stan narrates this story from Daria Vishlenko in Oklahoma.
Oklahoma schools would record parents' and students' immigration status at enrollment under a proposal from State School Superintendent Ryan Walters.
Our rule around illegal immigration accounting is simply that. It is to account for how many students of illegal immigrants are in our schools.
Over the past 4 years, Walters says he estimates that Oklahoma spent more than $470 million educating children of undocumented migrants.
Those are resources, that is personnel, that are having to be moved from inside the school year to meet the needs of those students. Those are numbers that we didn't have information on.
Oklahoma lawmakers are taking up the proposed rule, which would record but not prevent undocumented migrants from attending public schools. Samira Isaguirre came to the United States from Mexico more than 20 years ago. The legal immigrant and mother of six says the proposed rule could mean fewer undocumented children go to school.
Children should be out of politics.
In Tulsa, Union Public Schools administrators told parents they will not collect that immigration information. A statement from district spokesman Christopher Payne cited the Supreme Court's 1982 decision that all children have the right to public education, regardless of their immigration status. Protesting the proposed rule, Oklahoma teacher Fernando Baquera says it's already creating fear.
It's not right. It's not right for you to put fear in students and try to push them out of this free education that our Constitution says that everybody has, independent of who you are, where you come from.
But Walters wanting to count undocumented students makes sense to Todd Houston.
What Ryan Walters is actually proposing, which is very fair, and it helps the schools be able to know what they need to allocate.
Walter's proposal reflects some Oklahoma parents' concerns, says Tulsa School Board member Elena Ashley.
He says sometimes the hard things that people are not willing to say. They want to know that their children are safe, and they want to know that they can be correctly educated in their classrooms and feel comfortable.
Walters says he would be required by law to share school immigration information with other authorities.
If a law enforcement official comes in and asks for information, we are legally required to give that information over.
Following the state school board vote to send the proposed immigration rule to the legislature, Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt last week removed three board members, citing low national test scores and what he called needless political drama. For Daria Vershalenko in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Scott Stearns, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, February 18, 2025. We now leave you with Corner by Mafikizolo featuring Uhuru. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. For more information on our programs, log on to www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Saida Hamdun, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.